and refusing to be outclimbed by Ty, he had come along for the climb. They'd made it back to the bluff, but then Garrett slipped on some loose rocks and slid down the mountainside and into the river. Garrett was an expert swimmer, but with the snow caps melting and the rivers rushing, the current was too difficult to navigate in the dark. And for the first time in his life, Ty wasn't fast enough to make a difference. "Your dad called and told me he was going to River Rock. Said I could tag along or get out of his way. I offered up the chopper." Harris shrugged as if it were no big deal. But it was. It was a huge fucking deal in every way that mattered. "I saw the pictures on Facebook. He looked happy, so thanks," Ty said, hoping the genuine appreciation in his voice wasn't smothered out by the disappointment. Not that that was a new emotion when it came to his dad. Since the funeral, Dale hadn't bothered to invite Ty to a single anniversary climb. Not one. Whether it was simple oversight or something much more difficult to acknowledge, the rejection burned long and hot. Why he expected Garrett's 15th anniversary to be any different, he couldn't say. But for some stupid reason, Ty had hoped he'd get a call, an email, something. But when communication had been non-existent, he got the message. It seemed Dale had skipped the invite, choosing to honor his son's life with Harris and some of his buddies instead. Didn't stop to think that making the trip with Ty might lead to some kind of understanding. Then again, understanding required an honest conversation, something Ty and his dad had never seemed to reach. For as long as Ty could remember, his dad was more interested in talking about who he wanted Ty to be instead of who Ty really was. The difference now was Ty had found some kind of peace with who he was, and now he wanted to find the same acceptance with who he'd been. "He said you were working that mudslide in Santa Barbara. Didn't want to bother you." "I would have come," Ty pointed out. "I know you would have. But I also knew that they needed every hand they could get for that rescue. They were even pulling guys in from Reno and Portland." Ty let out a deep breath. "Yeah, this time of year, I can barely get a weekend off."
"Yet you're here."
He was there, all right, and not for a vacation. Lance Myers was the representative sent on behalf of CalSAR to oversee SARx. My dad didn't have a thing ready for the meeting. Harris stilled, his eyes going into oh-shit circles. Fitting, since this was an oh-shit moment of epic proportions. "Isn't SARx in 2 months?"
"Yep.
SARx, the annual Northern California Search and Rescue Intensive Training, was a huge moneymaker for the lodge, bringing in specialized teams from all over the state. Hundreds of extreme first responders came to train, learn new skills, and enjoy the mountains. Sequoia Lake Lodge had been the host for the past 50 years, and it had gained them a lot of recognition in the SNR community. That, combined with the local Type 1 terrain, attracted adrenaline junkies from around the world and made Sequoia Lake Lodge the premier destination in extreme adventures. By the time Lance called me to let me know about the botched meeting," Ty continued, thankful that Lance, a friend from the academy, had thought to call him, "his boss, needing to know if they should move the training to a new location, had already sent an inspector out to see if the lodge was up to code." Ty blew out a breath. "We failed the inspection, by the way. But based on the history with the lodge and me, Lance said he'd give us some time to make the upgrades and he'd send an inspector back out. I figured if Lance was calling me, it must be bad, so I took a personal leave. If they lost SARx and word got around that they'd failed a safety inspection, it could be a huge hit to the lodge and the community who relied on the tourists for their economy." He owed Lance big time. And Ty hated owing anyone anything.
How long did they give you? Harris asked.
3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Harris laughed as if Ty were delusional.
I take it your mom didn't fill you in much on what's going on?
A knot formed somewhere between his ribcage and his stomach, and then it started twisting.
Just that ski season had been rough, and they'd hired some extra help to get the lodge back in order for Sarex.
Harris gave a low whistle.
Man, you must be slipping with the ladies.
Why do you say that?
First, your mom gave some BS story about hiring new help, and you believed her, even though you know Dale is a tight ass when it comes to outsiders working in his lodge. And second, the girl next door who has no game, zero,
his hands made a zero,
just played you.
She wasn't playing me. Ty picked up the flaming pig's ass and took a hearty swallow, grinning like an idiot even as the liquid burned him inside out.
That's what flirting looks like in case you've forgotten your old age.
You're 2 years my senior, Harris said, picking up an empty mug and pouring himself a beer, sans the shot from hell.
You haven't seen the flip side of 9 o'clock in over a year.
The ass just grinned, so genuine and content, a part of Ty prickled with jealousy.
When you share breakfast every morning at 5 with the prettiest girl in the world, giving up beers with the guys isn't all that much of a sacrifice.
No arguments from me.
Ty lifted his glass, because if he had a pint-sized pixie like his goddaughter, Emma, looking at him like he hung the moon, he would probably trade in late nights with the guys, too.
Harris clinked rims. Good. I'll let Emma know you'll be over bright and early for pancakes tomorrow. She keeps asking when Uncle Ty-Ty will be back so you can watch that Frozen DVD you bought her for Christmas.
Ty groaned at the thought of hearing that soundtrack one more time, but he couldn't keep the smile from creeping in. Emma was damn cute. He'd missed the little tyke. And with her mom out of the picture, Ty didn't mind watching her princess movies with her. Not that he wanted a family of his own, more people to be responsible for. But he understood why other people needed that. The love, the connection, the belonging. That kind of vulnerability wasn't something Ty was interested in visiting again. Ever.
Oh, and in case those beach babes and eternal spring break hookups are clouding your judgment, Harris said, what happened a second ago wasn't flirting. That was kissing a stranger or some kind of girls' night out BS small town ladies do for entertainment.
Ty opened his mouth to argue, but then realized Harris was right. The lipstick innuendo on his window, the bowl, and that kiss. Well, shit. He'd been played. He was probably some kind of scavenger hunt item to be checked off and giggled about by a bunch of hot ladies during their next wine tasting.
I'll give her the weekend to gloat. Ty sat back, knowing by the Sequoia Lake Lodge employee logo on her shirt that he'd see her Monday.
You sure about that?
Harris asked.
This is Sequoia Lake. By tomorrow, it'll be all over town, and come Monday, your mom will be inviting her to dinner.
I don't think I have to worry about that, Ty said with confidence.
Avery didn't seem the type to gossip lightly. Plus, once she learned who Ty's mom was, he doubted she'd want to tangle with that.
Monday is soon enough. I know where she works.
Harris looked over the rim of his beer.
She know where you work?
Exactly my point. Because come Monday, when he called a staff meeting at the lodge and started cleaning up the mess his father had created, she'd figure it out. Too bad fooling around with his employees was not how he operated, because he might have found the one thing that could have made his stay a little more enjoyable.
To you coming home, Harris held up his beer.
To Garrett.
I can't believe he did that, in front of everyone. Grace Mills, the town's self-appointed hall monitor, and one of Avery's best friends at Living for Love, gasped brushing a bold red streak down the middle of her flower pot, making it look artsy.
It wasn't in front of everyone, Avery explained, making the exact same stroke on the exact same spot on her flower pot. Only, instead of a statement, it looked like she'd cut her finger and bled all over her project.
It was the last Sunday of the month, which meant the ladies of Living for Love had gathered to work on their community projects. This year, the group was making love blooms, hand-painted terracotta flower pots filled with blooming bulbs to be delivered to long-term hospitals in the area. The idea was to bring a little sunshine to an otherwise sterile existence. Avery had once been the recipient of a love bloom. She was beyond honored to pay it forward and brighten someone else's day. Sip and Splatters, the local art school and wine bar that Grace managed, had agreed to help with the project, and she invited them to her famous Monet and Martinis class. While a few of the ladies were there for the art lessons, the majority showed up for the free martinis and bottomless gossip. Because when the ladies of Living for Love had an outing, everyone's prattle was fair play. And Avery had done her share of playing this weekend with the hot stranger she'd met on the ice-slickened street. But since that wasn't the he her friend was referring to, she ignored her tingling lips and said, "It was just the gift shop girl." And Dale only expressed his concern that me taking out such a large group for my first solo trek might be too risky.
Too risky?
Grace plopped her brush in the jar of water.
"The only thing you're in risk of with that group is Mr. Fitz wanting you to hold his pole."
"Dale is cautious," Avery said with a smile, as if the act alone would diminish her disappointment that the experience she needed to hike Sierra Point was that much farther out of reach. Dale was known as having the toughest guidelines of any lodge in the Sierras. He knew better than anyone how deadly those mountains could be. And Avery wasn't asking him to make an exception to the rule. She just wanted the same rules to apply to everyone. Since being hired on, two other coordinators had been tapped, trained, and promoted to guides. Sure, they both had prior climbing and survival experience, but Avery was a fast learner. Yet she couldn't even get Dale to agree to a start date for her training. "I lack the skills and experience."
"Skills?" Grace snorted. "What kind of skills does one need to babysit a bunch of old retired men while they compare fish stories?"
"Dale just wants to make sure I'm ready before I take on my first solo trek."
"Do you feel ready?"
Olivia Preston asked as she walked up behind them, drops of evening mist still clinging to her coat from the outside. Olivia was the newest member of Living for Love and the third bestie in their trio. Avery considered this, thought through every skill she'd need to possess to handle a simple fishing hike with a group of seniors.
"I think so."
"Then get yourself to a place that you know so, and tell him you're ready.
And if he disagrees,
then agree to disagree, because unless you want to go back to living in a bubble, you've got to fight," Liv said, shrugging out of her coat. "And if he's still being stubborn and can't see past the sick woman you once were, well, then send him my way."
Liv was one of the top nurses at Mercy General, known for her nurturing bedside manner, her attention to detail, and most importantly, her ability to cut to the heart of the problem. She would convince Dale to listen to reason.
"And if that doesn't work,"
Grace said as she took Avery's brush and extended the lines of the red blob, making it into a beautiful red bird,
"get creative."
Right, that whole "don't wait for permission" mantra she'd adopted. Easy in theory, but hard in application for a woman who'd spent her entire life waiting on tests, on doctors, on her name to rise to the top of the list. After the transplant had taken, Avery had to wait in that recovery room for 3 months until a panel of experts told her she could finally go home. Even then, she'd been given a list of approved food and drink and activities. Now, she could finally plan a life past her lab results. She just needed to remind people of that.
Be assertive, fight, Get creative. Got it, she said. She might not have convinced Dale to let her take out Senior Extreme or earned that princess crown for Caroline, but she was making steady progress. Her energy was slow coming and she still bruised easily, but she'd gained back a few pounds and her skin was looking less pasty. Plus, she'd spent most of yesterday filling out page 6 in her memory journal, making one more person's final wish a reality. Avery's wish had been that her dear friend, Bella, was with her so that she could tell her that kissing a stranger in the heat of the moment led to the exact kind of heart-fluttering and soul-melting magic Bella had dreamed of. That 2 days had passed, and Avery's heart was still feeling the aftershocks. Or maybe it was her blood pressure still stabilizing. Either way, she placed a hand over her heart to keep it steady, then set the brush in the water jar and grabbed a martini. Even with her kidney 2.0, she couldn't drink the whole thing, but a sip wouldn't kill her. Who knew living loud could be so exciting, thrilling, mind-blowing, overwhelming? It's the pushover part that gets me, Grace said, taking a martini of her own. Tell me about it. Liv slid into her seat, and bypassing the art project altogether, she went straight for a martini, fisting too. I spent the past hour negotiating with a 5-year-old over the importance of eating your broccoli. Grace and Avery exchanged looks. Don't judge, Liv said. It's the rules of Mom's night out. Funny, I thought we were here for our monthly Living for Love craft night. Grace waved her paintbrush in the air as proof. I believe the invitation said Monet and martinis. Liv held up her glass. Plus, I ate all of my broccoli. Now, tell me why he said no so we can figure out how to get him to say yes.
He didn't technically say no, she said.
And Grace coughed something that sounded a lot like bullshit. Okay, he also didn't say yes. He said, when I've had the proper training, we can talk. Oh, he's good. Liv leaned back in her chair, her lips twitching with irritation and admiration. That is some serious parenting skills right there. I tried that with Paxton tonight. You can have dessert after you finish your greens. It still took a few gags, a convincing argument about green foods equating to green poop, and a story about some boy who grew hair on his chest from eating green things, but he finished every last speck. Huh. Avery might need to take a lesson from little Mr. Paxton. A whole hour. She had caved in 2 seconds flat. Then he said instead of dessert, he wanted a hamster. I thought he wanted a dog, Avery said. Until I told him a dog was a lot of responsibility, and maybe when he's bigger. Saying no without saying no, Grace said. Smart. That kid's smarter. We tracked his height for over a week, and when he realized that the line hadn't moved, he pointed out that a hamster is smaller than him, and he's even big enough to carry the cage. How did that go? Avery asked, her cheeks a little hot at the realization that Dale had used the same trick, and, unlike Paxton, she'd fallen for it. I told him he made a valid point, and I'd look into it, and then I gave him a second helping of dessert. Liv shrugged. Mommy misdirection at its finest, making a promise with no expiration and distracting him with a treat. But that's what this new year is all about, remember? Grace said, pointing her brush at Liv. 8 months ago, we sat in that awful hospital room waiting on Avery's doctor to read the verdict, and we made a pact. We said no matter the results, we weren't going to let fear and heartache hold us back from living. I know. And a hamster sounds like an easy first step, right? Liv let out a long, tired sigh, the kind of sigh that went soul deep and ached to release. Did you know they only live a few years? Opening my heart up to a cute little critter that has the life expectancy of snow tires isn't something either one of us is ready for. Last year,
After Liv's husband was killed in a snowstorm, she'd relocated with her 5-year-old son to Sequoia Lake and took a nursing job at Mercy General, where she and Avery met. Without family of her own nearby, Liv hoped being near her in-laws would help with the healing. But when his parents, unable to live among the memories, decided to relocate to Palm Beach, Liv bought their house, and Avery brought her to Living for Love. Since then, the three had been inseparable.
How do you know you're not ready if you don't try? Grace said.
And what if I get the hamster? He dies, Paxton goes back into that silent place where I can't even reach him, and I realize, whoops, we weren't ready. What then?
You try again,
Grace said, her voice thick with compassion and understanding.
Every loss ached until I thought I would pass out from the pain, but I never regretted opening my heart up to the possibility of love.
Powerful words coming from a woman who had lost more than any one person should be able to lose and still smile. But Grace always smiled, even when her body rejected every attempt at expanding her family, which ultimately cost Grace her marriage.
Maybe this is Paxton's way of telling you he's ready to try to love again.
Maybe, Liv said quietly, but Avery didn't think her friend would be opening up her heart anytime soon. Avery had taken a step, a huge one, and her head was still swimming at the memory.
I fulfilled one of those wishes in my living memory journal this weekend.
Liv's eyes went round.
You lived out someone's wish? And you waited this long to tell me?
Grace sounded about as upset as a kid at Disneyland.
I wanted to wait until you were both here.
Avery looked around to make sure all of the busy bodies were busy painting, then lowered her voice.
Also, because I didn't want to broadcast it.
Oh my God, Grace said. You're blushing, which means it was a juicy one. Was it birthday suit base jumping?
No, Liv said. Her doctor hasn't cleared her to do physical activity that could bruise the kidney. Plus, base jumping was Avery's dream, and the purpose of her journal was to live out other people's wishes for them when they were no longer able to.
Wait, Liv snapped her fingers. She's streaked naked through town with Hugh Jackman.
Nope.
Avery still wasn't sure how she was going to pull that one off, but she would figure something out to make that wish happen.
And what's up with people wanting to be naked all the time?
It's called foreplay, which leads to sex, Liv said, as if she were getting some regularly. We should all try it again sometime,
Grace said, and they all laughed.
It felt good to laugh,
and it felt even better to say, it wasn't sex, but it did include a hot stranger. Grace's hands flew to her mouth.
You did Bella's wish.
Avery nodded.
You kissed Bella Reed's infamous Parisian suitor?
Liz asked in case there was another Bella in Avery's journal.
He wasn't a Parisian or even European, but yes.
Liv's eyes went misty, as did Avery's. Bella wasn't just another Living for Love sister. She had been one of their closest friends, the fourth member of their posse, and a woman whose life had barely begun when loss struck in the form of cancer. It took her breasts, then her freedom, and eventually her life. But it never touched her sense of romance.
Oh my God!
Grace grabbed her hands, bouncing up and down in her chair.
You kissed someone! You! Avery Adams, the girl who ran to the bathroom crying when Billy Long kissed her under the monkey bars at recess, kissed someone? Wait.
Her smile faded.
Was it Carson? Please tell me it wasn't Carson.
Avery snorted. Last year, the idea would have thrilled her. Not anymore.
Avery didn't want to live her life as if there were a clock ticking.
It wasn't Carson.
Carson had never shaken her foundation like Ty had.
It was a stranger I met on Lake Street. I bought him a drink, and then I kissed him. That was it.
If that was it, then why are you smiling like that?
Like what?
Like you're floating?
I'm not floating.
Avery looked at the ground and, yep, her feet were firmly planted on the floor. Didn't mean she was on solid ground, though. At first, she'd convinced herself that the weightlessness was an overload of adrenaline and testosterone, two chemicals she hadn't had a lot of recent experience with. But as the strange lightness grew, she began to wonder if it was the kiss itself or what the kiss represented. Either way, she felt different, invincible, ready to finally climb Sierra Point. She pulled her phone out of her pocket and dialed. "What are you doing?" Liv asked.
"She's calling the hottie."
Grace scooted closer, so close she was practically pressing her ear to the phone. "I'm calling Dale, telling him I'm ready to lead a trek." Grace gave a fist pump in the air.
"You tell him."
"And if he needs to train me, then he needs to set a concrete time." Grace slowly lowered her hand to a "go get him, kid."
"Okay, not as balls out as I thought, but it's a step in the right direction."
"Be strong," Liv coached. "Tell him who you are, why you're calling, and don't show fear. Then word it in a way that he can't say no." She turned to Grace. "The first time Paxton did that, I was so thrown I let him have an ice cream sundae for dinner in his Batman underwear."
"A way he can't say no."
"Right. And don't let him distract you,"
Grace said over the ringing, then to Liv.
"What did you call it?"
"Mommy misdirection."
"No mommy misdirection."
Avery squared her shoulders and made a conscious decision not to get distracted right as the phone was picked up.
"Hello?"
A sweet as pie voice came through the cell.
"Hey, Irene. This is Avery. I'm calling for Dale."
Clear, to the point, no backing down. She was halfway there.
Wow, that was easier than she thought.
She gave a thumbs up to the girls.
"Oh, hey, sweetie. How's the art class going? I'm so sorry I couldn't make it. Rough night here."
Avery looked around and realized that Irene wasn't there, which explained why she was answering her home phone.
"Rough night? Are you sick?"
Irene was the founder of Living for Love. She was the heart and soul behind the group and the one who had kept it running all of these years. After the sudden death of her youngest son, the community rallied, showering her family with love and constant support to help them get through that trying time. So when Irene got to a place where she could breathe again, she started Living for Love as a way to pay back the kindness she'd received and to offer other women in the community a place to come when they needed support. Avery's was the first family she'd helped. In 13 years, Irene had only missed two events. That she wasn't there tonight meant she was either sick, stuck in bad weather, or zombies had attacked.
"Dale took a nap and woke up a little confused, so I figured it was best to stay put."
Or that. With a deep breath, Avery sat back down.
"I'm so sorry. Is he okay?"
"Just one of his spells," Irene said, but her tone told Avery she was beginning to believe that it was more than a few spells.
The inpatient care center Avery had frequented in her teens when she'd undergone experimental treatment also housed dementia and Alzheimer's patients. She wasn't a doctor, but she was pretty sure Dale was in the early stages of one or the other, and Irene wasn't ready to admit it yet.
"Are you returning his call?"
Avery looked at her phone. No missed call.
"He called?"
Irene sighed, and so did Avery.
"He said he did, but who knows? He was supposed to get a hold of you and let you know that Brody took a fall today. Thank goodness he was out with a group of nursing students from Reno State."
"Lucky him,"
Avery said through clenched teeth. Brody was a former X Games athlete who had a thing for co-eds, nature bunnies, and level one trails. When he combined the two, trouble usually ensued, but he'd most likely taken a fall right into a nurse's bed and wouldn't come up for air until ski weekend ended and classes were back in session.
Did you see a doctor's note?
Not yet, but he did call me from the ER, Irene said, releasing a deep breath. We had to cancel his last trek of the day and need to cancel his schedule for the next 2 days, which Dale said he'd have you do.
Knowing that faking ER sounds would be a staple in a guy like Brody's playbook, she closed her eyes and took a second to calm her irritation before saying,
Okay, I'll call the clients as soon as I hang up.
This couldn't have come at a worse time. With Dale not feeling his best, canceling on clients will look so unprofessional, especially after that failed safety inspection, not to mention
a failed safety inspection? Avery cut in, wondering why, as the coordinator and office manager, she hadn't even known there was an inspection to fail.
Why didn't you tell me? I would have put it on the calendar and made sure we were ready and in inspection shape.
Dale said he had it handled and, well, if we can't get it together by the next inspection, we will have to order all new ropes and safety harnesses if we still want to host SARX.
Still want to host? Avery had booked the entire lodge for SARX. If Sequoia Elite Mountain Rescue backed out, the lodge would lose a ton of money, not to mention the repeat business they counted on.
We'll get it handled.
I hope so. Irene sounded on the verge of tears, which in itself was not all that uncommon. The woman cried at greeting cards and YouTube cat videos, but this sounded different. Heavy. And Irene was the sunniest person Avery knew. But she understood the older woman's worry. SARX was a huge moneymaker for the lodge and community. It was also a huge point of pride for Dale. He had pictures of his staff with every year's team posted around the lodge, dating all the way back to the 60s. A hit like this could explain his level of agitation the past few days. It could also explain why he'd been so curt with her about training.
We will, I promise. And I promise to take care of the schedule.
Avery swiped the calendar on her cell that connected to the one at work.
You don't worry about a thing. Marshall has been asking for more hours so I can give him Brody's group treks, and I can pass his beginner climbing class to Clay.
The adventure coordinator, who had been hired after Avery, yet promoted within weeks. That leaves a beginner solo hike and a fishing excursion.
I knew I could count on you.
Irene released a telltale sniffle that indicated the crying was back to business as usual. Grace was shooting her a don't get distracted look, and Liv was mouthing, I have got those hikes handled, as in I will do those hikes. Avery waved them both off. She was beyond distracted, and she needed to handle this mess so that Irene could be there for her husband.
You and Dale can always count on me.
In unison, her friends let out an exasperated sigh and slumped back in their chairs. Avery sent Dale well wishes, and after a few more instructions about office matters, she ended the call. But when she turned, her friends were staring at her with big, troubling grins.
What? Brody is injured.
She threw up air quotes around the word.
I need to call him and see how long he plans on faking an injury.
Last time Brody had gone hiking with a lady in the medical profession, it ended in a 6-day medical leave. The pediatrician had been single, stacked, and interested. Brody had handed over a note written on official doctor's stationery diagnosing him with bronchitis. Coincidentally, it was the same week Dr. McBenefits requested for her vacation from the hospital. Brody had come back with a tan and a just-been-laid look, while everyone else needed a vacation from juggling schedules to fit in all of the clients.
Note or not, it's my job to fill the schedule or cancel on the customer.
Or you fill the schedule and put yourself in for the hike, Liv suggested.
The idea alone had Avery's stomach fluttering with excitement. But as soon as the first flicker happened, it died. Dale said no to me going at it solo until he trains me more. I don't want to cause him any more stress, and I doubt he will be in any condition to train me before 6 o'clock in the morning. Grace's smile became a full-out grin, and Avery had known her long enough to understand that meant trouble. For Avery. Dale said no to you taking on a group trek by yourself, not you doing a solo trek. Avery considered herself an honest person. She'd never cheated on a test in her life, fallen through on a promise, and never, ever led someone she respected astray. She'd learned life was too precious to behave otherwise. But facts were facts. Dale hadn't said no to taking a single client out alone. He'd said no to her taking out a group of clients at the same time. The only people who booked solo beginner walks with a guy like Brody were senior ladies who wanted an afternoon being charmed by a playboy. I did promise Irene I would handle it. And breaking a promise was as bad as a lie as far as Avery was concerned. How hard can a beginner hike be anyway? Chapter 5. The sun was barely peeking through the pines as Avery set her pack on the ground. It landed with a solid thud and sank slightly into the damp soil. Not a good sign, since she'd have to carry it for the entirety of the 5-mile hike around Cedar Rim. 5 miles wasn't all that bad, and the trail was rated beginner, meaning her grandma could cover it in less than 3 hours. But her grandma hadn't gone through major surgery 11 months ago and wouldn't be expected to carry a 30-pound pack. Kneeling down, Avery ignored the cold as dew seeped through her jeans and opened her bag to see if there was anything she could leave behind. Unfortunately, every item was listed as a necessity in the official adventure guide's handbook she had studied late into the night. Water, first aid kit, compass, map, high protein meal, 2 ways to make fire, and emergency shelter and bedding. In her boots, flannel top, orange puffer vest, and knit cap, she looked like a legit adventure guide. She even had the boots and equipment of an adventure guide. Problem was, she didn't have the body of an adventure guide. Maybe she could lose the sleeping bag and kindling. Who needed 2 different ways to make fire? Or maybe she needed to call a client and cancel. It was late March, but the ground was still frozen over, and the air was so cold she could see her breath. Even with her layers and the puffed vest she'd borrowed from Liv, she was shivering. Her hands were cold enough to freeze dry ice cream. She was in over her head, a position Avery had spent most of her life familiarizing herself with and had yet to master. With numb hands, she pulled her cell out of her pocket to find the number of the client, only instead the phone lit and her favorite picture filled the screen. Her parents sitting atop Sierra Point on their honeymoon. Her mom looked like a real-life Daniel Boone with her fur-lined hat and boots, only she was sporting 2 red braids and a grin big enough to change the world. And her dad was happy, so genuinely happy and in love. Avery reached out to touch the image, as if the act alone could bring that side of him back. Avery hadn't seen him smile like that since she was diagnosed. Then when her mom died, it was as if all of her dad's happiness died with her. Blinking back tears, and the hope that things could be different, Avery put her phone away and squared her shoulders. Sierra Point was 1,000,000 times harder than the Cedar Rim Trail, and Lillian had conquered that climb 11 months after her first transplant. If her mom could face down that behemoth of a mountain, Avery could surely handle a little hike in the cold. So what if her pack was bulky and the client had specifically requested a trail she'd never hiked? She was well-read in the world of wilderness, knew every plant in the area, and had 2 ways to make fire. She'd never actually made fire on demand, but how difficult could a skill that required 4 steps be? Not to mention, Avery had one of the best assets a survivalist could possess. Something more important than gadgets and brute strength. A positive attitude. And not just any positive attitude. One strong enough to see her through death and back twice. Avery had come here today to find an adventure, and that's what she was about to get. And the best part? She was going to help someone else find theirs. Adjusting her shoulders and her attitude, she breathed in deep. The scent of pine needles and distant snow burned her nose in a way that reminded her how good it was to be alive. 2 things that were a miracle in their own right. Grabbing her pack, she slung it up and over her shoulder, swaying a bit from the momentum and the weight. She slipped her arms through the straps and waited for the bag to settle, which it did. Far enough back to send her wobbling to the side and, oh God, into the trunk of a giant sequoia. The force of the impact jarred her heart and sent a fall of pine needles and morning dew raining down. The needles landed in her hair, poking her scalp, and the dew, don't even get her started on the dew, felt more like ice drops. Then, to her horror, she felt something slip beneath her collar and roll slowly down her neck. Her eyes slammed shut as she chanted, "It's just water. It's just water." But it wasn't water. Water didn't have prickly little legs and shit, 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 were those fangs? Avery never considered herself squeamish by any means, but this didn't feel like the average run-of-the-mill house pest. This felt like something Godzilla would attack over the skyline of Tokyo. So when she released a noise that sounded like a mountain goat bleeding for help, she told herself it was justified. Then she told herself to kill it before it killed her. Lunging forward, she spun around, swatting her hands, hoping to either confuse what she was sure was a big hairy spider or make him fly off, then spun herself headfirst into a wall, a rock-hard wall, with ripples and dips that smelled like heated dreams in the morning sun. "I got you," the wall said with some serious morning gravel to its voice. Avery lifted her gaze to meet a pair of deep brown simmering pools, and she felt her body hum with a surge of adrenaline. "Phew," she breathed, taking in the familiar grin and stubble that had haunted her dreams. It was the stranger from the bar. Her stranger from the bar. "Ty." He wore dark gray craghoppers with one of those fitted black body armor shirts that only looked good on guys with big biceps. His black beanie was pulled low, highlighting his scruff. He looked rugged, ready, and so damn good. Too good for 6 in the morning.
"Morning, Angel," Ty said, his eyes lit with humor. "The brochure boasted about its superiority in customer service, but this is impressive."
He looked at her hands, which were cupping his pecs.
"Nice, but unexpected."
She snatched her hands back and smoothed them over her braids. A few needles scattered to the ground and onto his boots. His expensive, well-loved, but well-worn boots. Boots a hardcore climber would wear. "You're my client?" she asked, her fingers coming to rest on her lips, which were already tingling. His gaze tracked the movement, then trailed down her body, taking in every inch of her, and his grin went dangerous. Her body was suddenly warm and toasty, and the morning was looking up. A hike in the woods with her own personal mountain man? Avery wanted to kiss the universe and thanks.
"I booked it under a friend's name."
He looked her up and down.
"And you don't look like Brody."
"Right." She straightened and tugged the bottom of her vest. "Brody's nursing an injured ankle, so I'm stepping in to handle his clients for the day."
"Huh, was all he said, but his gaze slipped to her mouth, her neck, and lower until he reached her pack and stopped. He took a few seconds to size up her preparedness, then cocked a single brow in question.
Where are we going? Girl Scout camp?
She straightened. I had us taking the Cedar Rim Trail, which goes around the backside of Sequoia Lake. But this is your adventure, so if you'd rather spend the afternoon with Girl Scouts, I can call up the local troop. I'll warn you, though. Last month, they roasted marshmallows and told campfire stories. She leaned in to whisper. Some were not for the faint of heart, but I hear the troop moms make a mean campfire's s'mortini.
Not sure I'm a s'mortini guy.
If one guy could make sipping a s'mortini masculine, it was no doubt Ty. The man oozed enough alpha vibes to have a grizzly scurrying for cover. Me either, but there's supposed to be like dessert with a kick. And she'd been waiting for the all-clear from her doctor to try one.
As tempting as troop moms and s'mortinis sound, I'll have to pass.
He looked at her pack again.
You got any climbing gear in that gypsy camp strapped to your back?
Even though she waved a nonchalant hand and gave an impressive, unfazed snort, her stomach knotted with unease. Not only was climbing equipment the one thing she hadn't packed, but rock climbing sounded a bit extreme for a beginner. The trail we're taking doesn't have any extreme inclines, so climbing gear isn't necessary.
Really? I thought Canyon Ridge required it.
He was calling her out. It was clear. This was the point in the conversation where Avery should have conceded, admitted she was barely qualified for their scheduled hike, but he stood there looking so capable and smug, like an Olympic athlete and Thor all wrapped up in one delicious package, and she didn't want the moment to stop. Canyon Ridge is one of our most difficult treks, not for the faint of heart. Or someone who'd had a semi-recent transplant. It's a class 4 with several near-vertical rocks. A strict, skilled climbers-only trail. His posture was relaxed and confident, so confident that she could scarcely breathe.
Good thing I have a strong heart. And my skills? Well, let's just say there isn't anything I can't handle,
he said and dropped his pack. Avery knew he had some serious skills, skills she wouldn't mind exploring more. As for being handled, she imagined his hands were more than capable, but since her heart was lodged securely in her throat and swelling, she had a hard time getting excited, because there, on the back of his pack, was a simple white and blue nylon patch that read, SARTEC 1. The Roman numeral 1 meant that when nature fought back and the end of the world was closing in on humanity, he was the one person she'd want on her side. The SARTEC? Well, that meant she was screwed. Not only had she kissed her first, and possibly now her last, client, she'd kissed a Type 1 search and rescue badass who was as elite as they came, and undoubtedly there for a surprise inspection. An inspection that if Avery screwed up could lead to single-handedly losing Sequoia Lake Lodge's biggest account. He pulled two harnesses out of his pack.
You ready to get vertical, Angel? Normally, Ty would take one look at those panicked baby blues and go into rescue mode, assessing what needed to happen to pull her through this situation happy and unscathed. But he wasn't here to rescue a wannabe wilderness hottie, no matter how adorable her pigtails were. Sadly, he wasn't here to get laid either. No, Ty had walked away from his team at the height of flood season to rescue his family's lodge, to figure out what was really going on, and see how bad things had become. He needed to see firsthand how dire the situation was so he could determine the best course of action. There was no room for distractions. Ty took in her jeans that were more fashion than function, her ridiculously bulky vest that only served to hide all of those sweet curves, and her just-out-of-the-box boots. Unless, of course, I need to reschedule for when Brody gets back. Panic flashed in her pretty eyes, and for a moment he thought she was going to back out. Only her stubborn side seemed to outweigh the smart one at that moment.
What? No, of course not. Here at Sequoia Lake Lodge, we pride ourselves on providing extreme adventures while adhering to the strictest safety guidelines.
He looked at her pack again and almost laughed. Prepared for anything, I take it.
A good adventure guide always is.
He wanted to argue that she wouldn't know the first thing about being a guide, but then she smiled, sweet and determined, and he decided to let her hang herself.
Give me a second to run and grab some supplies more suited to your adventure.
You might want to swap out your boots, too. She looked down, her face a sign that she didn't see anything wrong with her boots, but to her credit, she said,
Right.
Then started to turn around.
And, would it be unprofessional if I ask you to look down my shirt?
Ty let out a startled laugh. Avery Adams might be the worst adventure guide in the area, but she was damn refreshing. Is that a part of the experience? Her face flushed.
Not normally, but I think I have a stowaway and he's sinking his little fangs into my neck.
Normally, I'd make you buy me dinner first, but since this is a special situation, I'll make an exception. He gave a quick twirl of the finger. Turn around and drop the pack. She did, and it landed with a thump. What did she have in there? Bricks? Tackling the most immediate problem first, he pushed her braids to the side, exposing the creamy length of her neck. His chilled fingers slid down her skin, and she gave a little shiver. From the contact or the spider, he couldn't tell, but her breath hitched. He spotted the pokey hitchhiker. Found him. Hope you aren't afraid of spiders.
Nope.
She slammed her eyes shut.
Nothing much scares me. I just don't think it's fair he should get to tag along for free when you've paid for the trip.
Uh-huh, he mused. Then you'll be happy to know it wasn't Mr. Fangs. She whipped her head around and bam, he felt a jolt of awareness.
It wasn't Mr. Fangs?
Nope. He detached it from her bra strap, her black lacy bra strap, and held it up for her to see. A blood-sucking pine needle. The look of relief on her face was almost as amusing as watching her try to haul her pack back down the trail toward the lodge. To her credit, she made it back in record time, same boots with a little mud smeared on them for effect, and a few more things added to her pack. Not less, as he'd hoped, but that didn't stop her momentum or determination. Nope. Dora the Explorer set off up that steep mountainside as if she were a woman on a mission. It was as impressive as it was frustrating. Twice she slipped, and twice he was convinced she was finally going to admit she wasn't skilled enough to lead this trek. Both times she caught herself, until they were staring down Canyon Ridge, 100 feet of near-vertical granite face that was jagged, unforgiving, and damn scary for someone who had lost a fight with a carabiner a few short days ago. Need help? Ty asked as Avery stared over the cliff to the basin below. He was geared up, clipped in, with his pack attached to the end of the rope, ready to be lowered to the platform below.
Nope. I'm good,
Avery said, and even though her harness was on and she'd clipped in, her rope wasn't routed properly. Either you're so good that rappelling down in a near free fall is your style, or you might want to check your ATC. At least she looked at the rappelling device, proving she knew what it was. Then she blew her lead by looking back at him as though she hadn't a clue as to what was wrong. He offered her another out. Or we can pass, hike a little east of here, and take Poppy Alley back to the lodge. The safety-conscious part of Ty that made him the best at what he did prayed that she'd take it. But the risk-taker, who had a thing for pushing the limits, and apparently determined women, hoped that she'd plunge ahead. To his surprise and horror, she actually smiled. It was equal parts nerves and excitement, and man, was it a turn-on.
And miss the wind rushing beneath my wings? Or, my body? No way.
She undid her rope, then re-threaded it the exact same wrong way.
How long have you been in search and rescue?
What gave me away? He asked as he reached for her ATC.
I knew when I met you the other day that you were a serious wilderness guy, but the badge on your pack clued me in.
She looked down as he began to pull on her rope.
What are you doing?
Teaching you a new way to tie off, he said, ignoring her hands trying to bat his away.
My way works fine, she announced. In fact, it's the preferred method, according to the lodge's safety handbook.
What, from 1976? He snorted. Think of it this way. It will give you a new and improved method to impress your next client with. Smart girl, she gave in.
I do love learning new skills.
He tugged her harness to get a closer hold on her rope, only he tugged a little hard. She stumbled forward and right into his arms, giving him a glorious view of those lips, which just a few nights ago had given him quite the ride. He heard her breath catch, and he looked up higher, into those piercing lake blue eyes, and realized he wasn't the only one remembering that kiss. He also wasn't alone in wanting to revisit that night. She swayed closer, and he got a good whiff of her perfume, which was fresh and airy. Sexy without trying, just like her. Jesus. He focused on her harness and away from those lush lips. What the hell had gotten into him? It was a kiss. A single mind-blowing kiss, but nothing to wax poetic over. And so what if she was sexy? There were lots of sexy women. Sexy women who weren't trying to kill him by tackling a cliff.
The key to wilderness safety is continuous education and always refining your skills, Avery said.
Where did you read that? In some kind of self-help book? He asked while refeeding the rope through the ATC correctly. Because the first rule of wilderness safety was always be prepared, and the only thing this woman was prepared for was a picnic by the lake.
No.
Well, you sure as hell didn't read it in that book that told you how to feed your ATC, he said, securing her rope with a prussic, and then, in case she was so stubborn she wanted to go through with the descent, he clipped his safety rope to her harness. He was willing to see how far she'd go to hang herself, but he wouldn't let her get hurt.
Education comes in many forms, she said primly.
He looked her in the eye. And do you have any practical form of education? Well, shit, she hesitated, long enough to have Ty wondering if she'd ever even been on a hike. There was no way Dale, with all of his strict rules and iron fist views, would have hired a guide like Avery. Not unless things were worse than Ty realized. Yep, this was the moment he needed to call bullshit on her little charade, except they weren't rappelling quite yet, and there was something about the way she wholeheartedly threw herself into this role, determined to see it through, that intrigued him. Just like there was something about the way her eyes sparkled with life, even though he could see the faint smudges of exhaustion beneath that had him wanting to protect her. Have you ever rappelled down a 100-foot wall? When she opened her mouth, he clarified, in real life. She shut it, then shook her head. At least tell me you aren't afraid of heights. She clasped her hands in front of her, as if she were sitting in a church talking to Pastor Ryan.
Why would I bring us all the way up here if I were afraid of heights?
Good question. One he noticed she didn't answer. Look down.
What?
He crossed his arms. Look down without cringing. If heights aren't an issue, it shouldn't be a problem.
And miss that view?
She waved her hand to encompass the miles of snow-capped mountains blanketed with evergreen pines that circled Sequoia Lake.
Nah, a good adventure guide always focuses on the climb ahead.
This time she pointed to the crystal blue waters of Sequoia Lake.
Assessing and picturing his or her next move.
You sound like the old handbook they keep in the lodge office. When she smiled coyly, Ty dropped his hands and looked up at the sky for divine intervention. Because if this was a sign of how lax management had become, that was the only way he could possibly get the lodge ready to pass an inspection in a few weeks. You're afraid of heights, yet we're planning to take a client over Canyon Ridge. What were you thinking? She took a big breath and slowly let it out.
That I was taking a client out on a beginner hike.
She had him there. Ty knew at first glance Avery wasn't qualified for this trek. He could have ended it at any moment, but he'd wanted to see how far she'd take it, and this was where he started questioning his judgment. He wanted to spend more time with the woman who had made regular appearances in his fantasies as of late. Even worse, he'd wanted to impress her. Now here they were, about to go over the edge of a gnarly cliff with a rope tied like she was going out for her Slipknot badge.
I know I misled you, she went on, but I didn't want the lodge to lose the booking, and I had no idea I'd get a secret shopper.
Secret shopper? Cute and crazy. Tempting combo.
Yes, and my boss has been so busy getting ready for your inspection that when Brody got hurt, I told him I'd handle it. And he trusted me to handle it, which is normally a completely reasonable thing to do, but I wanted to prove to him that I could handle being a guide, so I took the booking myself, without his knowledge.
Not knowing who's on the mountain and what's happening with employees is a huge liability. How ironic that he was repeating what his dad had told him years ago. Not knowing you're taking out clients,